disappointed if you don't participate in this talk. Yeah, if you can get the radio mic working. I was told yesterday the radio mic didn't work.
Okay, I'll get someone to work on it.
Okay, so please ask questions during the talk. Basically, I'm going to be talking a bit about software engineering. I fairly bought that box, assuming that it ran Linux, and I put it in for my parents, and that would be great. That could act as their little gateway. I didn't want them to have to deal with an external ADSL modem. Now, I got it home, and I discovered immediately it didn't run Linux, and that was rather disappointing. But I thought, okay, I need this box quickly for my parents. I can put up with that. They won't actually mind. I won't tell them. So, brilliant. This is the GPL at work. This is a company admitting to the fact that they are using free software in this device that I accidentally bought. Right? I bought it because it was the best darn device that was recommended on these forums. So then I, of course, went to this website immediately, you know, said, I'll wait and install in this thing and have a look. And on the website, I found the tarball... Samba 2, not Samba... So the thesis that I'm going to be trying to provide some evidence for in this talk, and that I'm sure you will poke holes in, is that a decade ago, I think most free software projects were a bit behind the times in the software engineering. What I'm noticing lately is they are getting more airplay, they're getting more prominence. More and more projects are adopting these software engineering techniques, and that's a really good thing, and that is raising the quality of free software enormously. Plus, another thing that I'd like to emphasise in this talk is that the overall effect of all lumps of code. Or if you go back even further and you read the... What was that in the book that was photocopied by everyone? Lines, thank you. So in that book, you read the source code, and what struck me most about that source code was its simplicity. And that simplicity is a good thing, but at the same time, it shows the sort of the state of the art of software engineering at the time. Tools we use in Samba, fine static, minimal includes, those types of things, plus just GCC warnings. If you go and take an early version of Samba, we always have striven for Samba to produce minimal warnings. And so, you know, Samba 2 produced no warnings with GCC at the time. If you run it through a current version of GCC, your screen is just going, static analysis you can do. And I think that is making an enormous difference in software quality. Runtime analysis is the one that I start getting really excited about. And so when was the first profiler written? Ages ago, surely. When was Prof first written? 80s? Early 80s, perhaps? What we find is that the terminology that I'm now starting to hear commonly on IRC is, before you do a release, is it Valgrind clean? Right, Erasmus, I think that you gave me that quote for PHP. Where are you in the audience? You're hiding there? You're still asleep? Oh, up there, yeah. So is that right, PHP? You make sure you're Valgrind clean before you do the release of PHP. And that is the attitude now. When you screwed up, and that it might become fatal later, it might not. So many times, the early releases of Samba are not Valgrind clean, yet they work. Lots of people are using them. So it's an incredible tool, absolutely incredible. Plus things like tracing infrastructures. You know, there's been a lot of work done lately on various tracing infrastructures, and of course arguments as to what the best tracing runs of Purify. But basically, Valgrind just walloped them all. It is so much better than all the other tools.
Did you ever try Intel's
B2? No, I never have. Sorry. What? Tell us about it. Sorry, who?
Intel's B2 actually uses the profiling hardware on V6 and IRC CPU, and it's used in them to do...
The next really big thing, and this has been a massive effect in the Samba project, is code generation. Automatically generated code. Now, I am noticing... Now, what I don't really know is whether I am just noticing the other code generation projects now because I am now interested in code generation because we're doing it a lot, or whether, in fact, code generation is really rising in usage.
You people don't... Why don't I show you some IDL? Give me an excuse to actually show you some code here. Okay. Or more particularly some specifications because... Yeah, so here is, for example, some... That's readable to you guys? So here's a function. This is the query... Okay, yeah, sure. So, yeah, there's a difference. There's
number of layers. You've got various encodings, the wire encodings, NDR, and the particular encoding that is used in Microsoft applications is the network data representation, NDR, which describes how to take some IDL and encode it into a wire. Putting DCOM interfaces on Linux, which I think is absolutely brilliant. The WMI, the Windows Management Interfaces, which can run over DCOM, could then become available to be able to manage boxes in both directions. It's some really good work. Now, we also have code generation based on SWG for Python bindings done by Tim Potter. Where are you, Tim? Hiding. There you are. Yeah, so he's been doing Python. It's absolutely true. That's partly why we didn't use, for example, there's a IDL compiler called is it Fiddle, I think, the fast IDL compiler. There's a bunch of different IDL compilers available. We looked at them, and the problem is that their frameworks were either tried to be too general, and a really, really general framework, you might as well just
find that using generated code makes debugging harder because you don't know whether the bugs in the code generator.
No, it doesn't. And the reason for that is we, again, went a lot further than what other DCRPC implementations did. We generated debugging code. And in fact, we generate large portions of our test suite. We generate code that allows us to write test order, constraints to support alignment constraints, to support structures that don't have the discriminator, unions without the discriminator explicitly on the wire, where the union, which branch of the unions go down is implied by some other variable rather than being explicitly encoded on the wire. We support all that in our IDL compiler now. And that allowed us to multi-thread it. And I'll be talking a bit about threads later. This is not multi-threaded. One of the topics of my conversation later is just how evil threads are. So anyway, it's easy enough to follow through with the debugger. We deliberately made it. This code almost looks like the code we used in Samba 3, Samba 2. It's just a bit neater. Yep, Rusty.
But did you write the first version at all?
Yes. Yes, that's right. This is my dirty little secret. I happen to be an Orc fan. And the first attempt at this was written largely on a plane flight on the way to the SIFS conference in San Francisco. And I did it as, if the string matches the following, then do this. If then type compiler. Right? Whereas our Perl-based one actually has a grammar.
Ooh.
See, I didn't do computer science. I taught computer science, but I never actually studied it. And so I had never done. Okay. Now, Samba versus Wine versus Ethereal. Samba, Wine, and Ethereal is these three projects sort of, orbiting each other with some overlap here and there. A lot of common stuff that we're doing. The Ethereal guys want to decode and display all the protocols that we implement. Existing executables, DLLs, that make calls into the Microsoft runtimes for RPC, and they want that to still work. That means they've got to generate code from that IDL in an almost identical fashion to what Microsoft does. Otherwise, you can't link it in. It's got to use the same symbol name, it's got to use the same table-generated approach. It can't have any extension cascade always sends packets in native byte order, and then the receiver does the fix-up and the translation. Right? That means that whenever a Sun Cascade box is talking to an x86 Windows box, every packet is being byte order fixed up. Now, the way they do that, if you look at the Open Group DCRPC code, right, we put our client in big endian mode. Right, to simulate what Cascade does, then Windows 2003 slows to a crawl, an absolute crawl. Running the test takes an order of magnitude longer at least, Andrew, maybe more, 40 times slower to run the test of the SAMR test, because every one of those buffers is going through this table. It falls back to the usual methods, but if you've got GCC and it's got inline ASM, it generates the correct PowerPC code to do just the right, byte flipping, etc. Yeah, Keith.
Did table driven stuff like X and didn't see the performance?
Right, yeah, but you're Keith and that was Apollo and Microsoft, and it can be done fast. Table driven can be done fast. Microsoft, initially you run into situations when you're writing a file server or a whatever that you care about backgrounding an operation in some way, having 1,000 operations in flight at one time when we're running our NBT server, right? And it's on a busy network, then you literally can be getting, you know, thousands of NBT requests in the space of a few seconds, and those take a while. But it sure as hell isn't good software engineering. Okay, so any Threads fans here? Authors of Threads Library? I'm an author of a Threads Library, by the way. I admit to that. I wrote a Threads Library at one stage, and then I saw the light and realised they are evil. Right, so what about the other solutions? Okay, processes are ugly. It gets operations. You can do any operation in a process, you can do in a thread. But processes still can be ugly because the services provided with processes, the APIs provided in a thread library do make for some cleaner programming in some cases. I wish some of those same APIs were as easy to use with processes. They should be. They're not. People have got the... but we did it. We tried to make it sane. And you'll have to judge whether we are sane currently. Looking at some of the Samba team members, one might wonder. But what we did is we built a infrastructure to try to make, to abstract all of this stuff out into a sane set of routines. And so we have a copy a file from the remote server to the local one, and all of this through a single, completely asynchronous call, so this can be done as a background task within a single process, with no threading, nothing, and yet the code is relatively sane. Now, it is a slightly different way of programming. It required us to rethink, and it required we've been... It's like when I first started teaching here at ANU, it was a favourite sport of my academics to write anti-plagiarism tools, plagiarism detector. It's just the thing you did, right? And so the thing you do in the world of asynchronous programming... Sorry?
What
if they plagiarised? Anyway, so DNS resolving, what we ended up doing is when you're doing asynchronous DNS requests, would you believe that we actually have to fork, do the DNS request in the... So that's one of the markets we're aiming for, but the embedded market, and that's one of the reasons we went to this trouble of creating the events framework and the composite functions. Yep.
Thank you for serving Lake Jubilee Baptist College from a paper.
Right, okay, yep, there you go. So lowering the memory usage, the Samba 4 has a pluggable VFS backends, right? Like the VFS layer in the kernel, you can plug in storage backends. The default backend is the POSIX backend that talks to a POSIX file system. Then you can have backends that talk to NT file systems, you know, whatever databases, whatever you like. But that API is rich enough to talk to just about anything you want to. And the one of the backends...